Today's shiur is sponsored anonymously.
Just before we continue, I'd like to go back to something we said last week, amplify a little bit. I mentioned the Chazal Gemara that states that a person who is left out of a party feels tremendous anguish, like 60 blows, rather than being left out of the hearing the sound of the mishta and not participating. And one of the sources is our incident with Natan HaNavi. And the way I interpreted it was that Natan HaNavi felt that tsar, even though this was a party that he never would have attended and never would have wanted to attend, because it was an act of rebellion. It was suggested that perhaps there's another way of looking at it, which is that Natan himself really didn't feel that way, but since he was presenting this story to David HaMelech as if David authorized Adoniyahu, right? He was taking the stance that Adoniyahu must have been acting with David's consent, and therefore he was complaining to David, so David would think that he felt that tsar, because after all, if it was a legitimate party, why wasn't he invited? Which would reduce to some extent the chiddush that I was trying to say. It would still be quite interesting that would be a factor. You're talking about matters of state and who should be king, and you're talking about a navi, and still that's a factor in the equation, but it wouldn't be quite as dramatic as the way I had stated it. Lukashanila asked me, if it was up to me, I would still stick by my guns, because it seems to me this other approach, to say that it was staged, wouldn't really work, because if the whole thing is based on the hint that Natan HaNavi mentioned himself first, and therefore there's an indication that Natan must have been feeling pain, but how is David supposed to know what that pain is from? Maybe he's feeling pain for the reason that he states, that, listen, why didn't you tell me? If you were changing the succession to the throne, I'm such a loyal servant, and this is the complaint they say, then why didn't you tell me? So if the expression Li Ani Avdecha implies that he felt pain, it wouldn't necessarily convey the message to David that the pain was because he wasn't invited to the party. Whereas the way I was expressing it is that he wasn't intending to convey anything. It came up by itself. That since there was some subconscious feeling of pain, he, without realizing it, mentioned himself first, and this is the expression. So that would be the way I would look at it. However, I did check back, and I did see that the Kli Yakar does learn it the other way. So although, you know, to my own das would be not in one way, but I do see that he learns the other way, so I have to say, you know, I'm not sure. I can't say with definitiveness this approach to the Gemara, and even though I think the pashtus of the Gemara is mashma that way, but obviously there apparently is room for another interpretation. So wanted to put that on the record, especially if we end up distributing these. Continuing Pasuk of Zion, this is the final Pasuk of Natan HaNavi's presentation to David HaMelech. So again, to sort of get our bearings, so Natan HaNavi is the quote-unquote bad cop. He's coming with an accusation to David. How is it possible Adoniyahu would have done such a thing without your knowledge? And if you did decide to change, so then why wasn't I told? If this thing came from the king, and you did not let your servant know who is going to sit on the throne of my master the king after him. Grammatically, the pasuk doesn't really make sense. If this came from the king and you didn't tell me, so yeah, what's the conclusion? So the way most mefarshim learn is you have to sort of, you know, squeeze the language a bit. And v'lo hodata is a, sort of like a question. V'lo hodata, and you didn't let me know? B'tmiya, with a question mark. Why didn't you let me know? After all, I was the one who told you in the first place that Shlomo should be king, and it would only be kamin derech eretz, so to speak, to let me know if there's going to be a change and you're going to be going against what I told you, then you should have let me know. The Abar Benel has a slightly different twist. He also learns v'lo hodata b'tmiya with a question, but not why didn't you let me know, but rather, didn't you let me know? Did you not let me know who was going to be a king? And is this the first conversation we had on this subject? Didn't you yourself tell me that Shlomo was going to be king? So what's going on? Why are you going back on your own word? And according to that interpretation, he's sort of bringing up the memories of David HaMelech's Shvua, right? If you recall, Bathsheba focused primarily on the Shvua, because the Shvua was to Bathsheba. Nathan HaNavi is not really mentioning it, but here he's saying, but listen, you yourself said that Shlomo should be king. So why are you going back on your word? So now the two presentations have been made, and David HaMelech is ready to respond. So the pasuk says, "Vayan Hamelach David." The king David answered, "Vayomer," and he said, "Kirili leBathsheba, call Bathsheba to me." Vatava lifnei Hamelach, and she came before the king. Vatama lifnei Hamelach, and she stood before the king. Now we mentioned before that Bathsheba was there, but when Nathan HaNavi showed up, Bathsheba left to avoid the appearance of collusion, even though there was collusion, but that was part of the plan. And now David HaMelech is calling her back. Why is he calling her back? Right, David HaMelech could have answered directly to Nathan HaNavi and told Nathan HaNavi to tell Bathsheba, or at a later point in time, next time he sees Bathsheba, let her know, or when actually there's going to, everyone's going to know in a little while what's going on. They're going to make a whole public display. Bathsheba will find out. So why did David HaMelech feel it necessary to call back Bathsheba before she responded? And the reason is that since it was really primarily her business, right, she was the main party and she was the one who was affected. It was her shvu, it was her son, maybe even her life. So the proper derech eretz is that she should be the first to hear about it. You don't go to the secondary party, even though he's standing right in front of you, and the primary party has to hear about it secondhand, here so he gets it later. There's a certain inyan derech eretz. This affects me. It's my life. Speak face to face. How many times do you hear that taina? Why didn't you tell me to my face? There's something to it. It's a proper derech eretz. It seems to me there's a similar concept. I think they're related. A similar concept in derech eretz. The Chazal tell us that if you send a shliach, a messenger, to take care of some business, he's supposed to report back to the one who sent him to tell them that he took care of it, even if the sender already knows. And this is learned from Moshe Rabbeinu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai, go tell the people, ask the people, are they ready to accept the Torah, various things. And then they all said, Kol Asher Dibra Hashem Na'asa. And Moshe went back and told Hashem. Doesn't Moshe realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu already knows? Says that from here we learn derech eretz that you have to report back to the one who sent you. Again, it's a similar idea. It's not exactly the same, but I think it's a related form of derech eretz. The person who is nogea, speak face to face. Let him know. Don't rely on hearsay. It indicates a little bit of a lack of concern, a lack of chashivas. If I really value you and who you are, and I consider this to be important, then I would speak to you directly. Actually, it's very interesting. It's totally a little bit on machlokas rishonim, but it appears that, at least according to some opinions, at least some variations of Rashi, that this is actually not just a musar, but a halacha concept that has nafkaminas la halacha. There's a Gemara in Gittin, has a very interesting case. The Gemara is talking about different types of shlichus, of bringing a get from Medina Sayyam, where there's a takana de rabban, and you have to say b'fanai nechtam to prove that the get was written l'shma, or whatever the other reasons may be. So there's a situation where the wife herself is the shliach, and the Gemara is discussing how could that be. And an example given in the Gemara is where a man says to a woman, his own wife, here is your get, but the get shouldn't take effect now. You be a shliach to deliver the get to yourself. And when you get to such and such a place, then the get will be valid. So until you reach that place, you're a shliach of the husband acting on his behalf, and then you accept the get from yourself. This is the case of the Gemara. The Gemara says that that doesn't work because it's lo chazra shlichus etzel habal. The shlichus cannot go back to the husband. It's a very big question. What does that mean? But Rashi says that the pshat in the Gemara is that the woman can't report back to the husband and say a sisi shlichusecha, because by the time she did the shlichus, she's not in shlich anymore. By the time she does the shlich, she becomes the other party to the transaction. So a shlich has to be a shlich a little bit after you do the shlichus too, because part of shlichus is to report back. So it's not just a derech eretz to report back. It's somewhat of a requirement. What's a little bit hard to understand is that we don't find that you actually have to report back. You only have to be able to report back. But if you didn't report back, the get is still valid. So it's a little bit tricky, but the concept seems to be there. See, where does Rashi get this, that there's such an idea? Who says you have to report back altogether? So however we end up, and I guess this is, we're not going to get into Gittin, but however we end up, you see that this Derech Eretz concept actually has some impact in Halacha L'maaseh. So therefore, David HaMelech calls Bathsheba. Bathsheba should hear firsthand, should be one of the first two people to know. And obviously, Nathan remains in the room as well. And then the king, once she's there, the king gives his response. And he says as follows, Vayishava HaMelech Vayomar. And the king swore and said, Chai Hashem, that's a lashon shvua, by the life of Hashem, Asher poda et nafshi mikol tzara, who has redeemed me from all difficulties. Ki, continue to pass the garment, ki kasher nishbati loch b'Hashem Elokei Yisrael lemar, the previous shvua that I made to you in the name of Hashem Elokei Yisrael, ki Shlomo b'neich yimloch achar, right, that Shlomo your son will rule after me, who yeshev al kisi tachtoi, and he will sit on my throne in place of me, ki kein e'etzeh hayom hazeh, I will do this on this very day, I will take care of it on this very day. The obvious question is that if David HaMelech had previously sworn that Shlomo was to be king, why is he swearing again? Right? A unnecessary shvuah is actually usur. And a shvuah shav, not only a false shvuah, but an unnecessary shvuah, to swear to the same thing a second time, one would think is almost like a shvuah shav. Why would David do that? So perhaps the simplest explanation is that the key to this shvuah is really that last phrase, Kein Eseh Hayom Hazeh. It's true that he had previously sworn to make sure that Shlomo would be king, but he never said when. And to fulfill his original shvuah would have been sufficient to say, okay, listen, you know, there's a holiday weekend coming up, you know, it's not the best time, I'll wait till next week, I'm busy with other things. A week from Tuesday, give me a call back on a week from Tuesday, we'll see if you can fit you into the schedule. So, assuming that David HaMelech is still alive a week from Tuesday, he could still fulfill the Shvuah. There's a certain danger in that, obviously. So, in order to fulfill his first Shvuah, he could have waited. The second Shvuah was to be Mizdareh, to say, I'm going to take care of it right now, this very moment. The Kli Yoker brings another possibility. And according to what he's suggesting is that certainly for sure in Nathan and Navi's presentation and even in Bathsheba's presentation there was a certain implication that perhaps David is backing off his first shvuah. And there could be various excuses. Obviously you can't just ignore a shvuah, but you know, perhaps David is suggesting that Shlomo is not ready to be a king, perhaps some other reason, some rationale, some excuse. So David is saying to them, if you think that I've abandoned my first shvuah because I have excuses, I have rationalizations, I have justifications, and therefore you're coming to me and you're saying, wait, you know, what's going on? Was it your plan? So I'm making another shvuah. So you see clearly, if I had any rationalization excuses, I couldn't swear now that I'm going to do it. So he's saying, I'm renewing. You know, in the Goy Shavuot, it's a popular thing now, you know, that the people are married for a long time, they renew their vows. somebody said I wasn't aware that they expired. But here there was some accusation. Perhaps the first shvu, you, David HaMelech, feel that that first shvu is not binding. So David HaMelech says, so I'm making another shvu. You know, I believe that it's binding. It's not really taking away from it. It's reinforcing it. You know, David himself is not really abandoning his first shvu, but he's sort of swearing lefi dai tam. If you think that I feel I can still get out of it, so I'm making another shvu. Now you know for sure I can't get out of it. But David in the end fulfills both shvus. So this is another possibility of why he swore again. So Pasuk Lamed Aleph, we find Basheva answers. Batikod Basheva Apayim Eretz. Basheva bowed down twice towards the ground. Shishtachavu LaMelech, she bowed to the king. Batoma, and she said, Yechi Adoni HaMelech David LaOlam. May David HaMelech live forever. Now, why here we have Nosan HaNavi standing there and Basheva standing there, but Basheva is the one who responds, not Nosan HaNavi. And that follows because David HaMelech was primarily addressing Basheva. He called Basheva back. He said, Shlomo Bineich, your son Shlomo will rule after me. So David is addressing Basheva because primarily it concerns Basheva, and then Basheva is responding because David has addressed her. So she's there, and Nosan HaNavi is standing as a silent witness. But Bathsheba's response contains a very strange expression. She says, Yechi Adoni HaMelech David La'olam. First of all, that's impossible. And what does she mean by that? And the whole reason why this whole discussion is taking place in the first place is because David appears to be on the verge of death. So why is she responding, L'chi Adonai Melech David La'olam? So one explanation, and perhaps a more simple explanation, is that it's meant really just as an expression that Bathsheba is saying, don't think that I'm coming to you because I'm eager for Shlomo to be king. I want you to die already and Shlomo should be king. I would rather that you live forever. Obviously that's not possible, and that's why we have to make plans for the future, but my hargasha, my feeling is Yechi Adoni HaMelech David La'olam. The fact is, there's always a difficulty to prepare for after one's death. It's a very uncomfortable thing, and to approach somebody to prepare is even more uncomfortable. You know, to ask somebody to make a will, to ask somebody to take care of their estate, therefore to sort of counter that impression, that feeling that is generated as if I'm eager for David HaMelech's death, she says, Yechi Adoni HaMelech David La'olam. My feeling really is that we wish you could live forever. But given the realities of this world, that it doesn't work that way, therefore we have to do what we have to do to prepare for the future. Radak suggests another possibility. Radak says that she's referring to Olam Haba. We find many cases in the Psukim that when we talk about life, we're really talking about the world to come, not this world. And perhaps the most famous is the story of Acher. You know, Acher was a Tana who became an Apikoros, and the incident that triggered that Apikorosis was when he witnessed the scene where a father told his son to climb a tree to get some eggs from a nest that was in the tree. And the son climbed the tree and chased away the mother, as the mitzvah says, and took the eggs, and on the way down fell and was killed. So says, there are two mitzvahs in the Torah where the Torah specifically says, L'man ya'arichun yamecha, that you should live long. Your days should be lengthened. One is the mitzvah of kibud av v'aim, and one is the mitzvah of shiluach hakein, sending away the mother. Here this boy did both mitzvahs at once. I was listening to the father and was sending away the mother, and he died on the spot. So this shook him up and led to his apikarsis. And the Gemara said that he didn't understand that Yarichun Yamecha refers to Olam Haba. It isn't a promise or a guarantee that you're going to have a long life in this world. It means Yom Shekula Arach, Olam Haba. So it says in a similar way, the Radak is interpreting Yechia HaMelech David La'olam, refers to Olam Haba. This fits very well with some of the interpretations we had in the earlier pasuk when it said Vayisani Ubni Shlomo Chataim, that I and my son Shlomo be Chataim, will be sinners. According to various interpretations, that was really referring to David. If you don't do anything about it, you, David, will be a sinner, either because you're not taking proper measures to fulfill your Shvuah, or because it will bring out again and show the world that the Chait of Bathsheba was never forgiven. So now that you've taken care of it, there's no problem with the sin, so therefore Yechi Adonim of David Olam. A third pshat mentioned in the Rishonim is Chazal tell us that when a person dies but leaves a son to fill his place, it's considered like he's still alive. Whereas if you don't, then his death is a real death. And we find a difference in expression. When Yoav died, it said Vayamas, and when David died, it says Vayishkav Imavosav, because the death is not final. You have a son to carry on, to perpetuate what you did. So according to that, Yechi HaMelech David Olam means may David live forever, not literally that David himself will live forever, but may he have a son to perpetuate what he did. And then when that son dies, may he also have a son to perpetuate what he did. And if you do that, you could taka live forever, generation after generation. So this was the bracha, the tefillah, the request, the wish that Bathsheba is saying, I hope that David will remain alive, so to speak, forever, in the sense that he will have a son who follows in the path of David, and that son will also have a son who follows in the path of David, and so on and so forth, forever. It didn't work out that way historically, because some of the descendants of David went off. But that was what she was intending, and that's what she was requesting by this expression. Yechi Adoni HaMelech David La'olam. We find, by the way, a similar idea when related to a Rebbe and a Talmud. The Torah tells us that Moshe, before he died, said to Klal Yisrael, Ki adati achrei mosi ki hashchesh tashchisem. I know that after my death you will become corrupted and that you will serve Avodah Zarah. But the pasuk in Yoshua tells us that there was no chait in Klal Yisrael, no significant chait in Klal Yisrael, from the time until the time of the death of Yeshua and the Zekenah. So really they did not become corrupted after Moshe's death. So what does it mean, Achrei Mosi Kiashchesh Tashchisim? So Rashi brings on the spot from Chazal that when you have a Talmud who follows in your way, Kol Zman, the Talmud is alive, it's Ke'ilu, the Rebbe is alive. So when Moshe said Achrei Mosi, he didn't mean immediately after my death, he meant after the death of my Talmidim who are going to be following my path. But in the next generation, they weakened and they didn't follow as loyally and as devotedly in the path of Moshe, and that's when the corruption began. So now David is giving instructions, right? He's told them, he made a shvuah that he's going to take care of it today. Bathsheba responds with Yechi Adoni HaMelech David HaOlam, and now David HaMelech is giving instructions exactly how to take care of it. So Vayomer HaMelech David, and David the Melech said, Kiruli, call for me, L'tzadok HaKohen, U'l'nasan HaNavi, U'l'vinayahu ben Yehoyada, V'yavol lifnei HaMelech. Now, this conversation, the Mepharshim assume must have taken, or this decree must have taken place a little bit later, because Nasan HaNavi was there at the time of the original conversation. So what apparently must have happened was Bathsheba and Nasan left the room, David must have called his messengers, and he's working out the plan, what exactly he wants to do, and now he's giving the instructions. And he makes the following declaration, Kol Tzadok HaKohen, Nasan HaNavi, V'Nanehu Ben Yehoyada, V'Yavo Lifnei HaMelech. The Gemara in Harios concludes from this pasuk as well as another pasuk, a certain hierarchy in terms of priority, kavod, who gets priority. In first place is the Melech, the king. That actually we don't see in this pasuk, we see this in the next pasuk. Because he refers to them as Avdei Adonechem. all these people are this, when he tells these people to take the avadim of David, David says to all these people, Tzadok, Eliyahu, Nasan, bring my avadim. He calls them Avdei Adonechem, referring to himself as Adonechem, as your master. So it means the king comes ahead of the Kohen Gadol, ahead of the Navi, and ahead of the Eliyahu ben Yehoyada, who was the Rosh HaSanhedrin. After that, the order is Kohen Gadol 1, Navi 2, Rosh Sanhedrin 3. Now, there's a caveat here. People may be aware of the famous Gemara, it's the same Gemara actually, that says that Afilu Mamzer Tamil Chacham, the Kohen Gadol HaMaaretz, right, so the Mamzer has the lowest status in Yichus, comes ahead of the Kohen Gadol. So, Tamil Chacham always comes first. But the presumption here is that they were all Tamidei Chachamim. David and Tzadok HaKohen and Nosan HaNavi and Eliyahu and Yehoyada. So that wasn't the issue. When they were all relatively equal stature in terms of Tamidei Chachamim, in terms of their position, who comes first? So the Kohen Gadol is first, the Navi is second, and Rosh Sanhedrin is third. I looked around it, but I didn't see anybody who explained why. Why is the, I should, before I do that, just point out that there is a second pasuk that the Gemara brings from the time of the Bayis Sheni. It says Yoshua HaKohen Anashim Asher Ito Ki Anshe Mofes Hem. So Yoshua is put ahead of these Anashim Asher Ito, and the Gemara says Anshe Mofes means they were Nevi'im. It was Chagai Zechariah Malachi who were still around when Yeshua was the Kohen Gadol. And the Mefarshim explain why you need, the Gemara actually explains why you needed a second pasuk, because during the time of the first base of Mikdash, the Kohen Gadol had the Urim V'Tumim, which were the special Shem Hashem inside the Choshen Mishpat, and you were able to ask questions to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and get answers through the Urim V'Tumim. So that meant the Kohen Gadol in a certain sense was a Navi also. So you might think that the reason why the Kohen Gadol comes ahead of the Navi is because he's really a Navi plus. Maybe he doesn't speak verbally with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, but he speaks through the Urim V'Tumim. So therefore, the Gemara brings a pasuk from the second base and making sure they didn't have the Urim V'Tumim, and still the Kohen Gadol comes ahead of the Navi. I couldn't find any Mefarshim who explained why, so I guess it gives me the liberty to speculate on my own. But what it seems to me that perhaps the explanation might be, and maybe if you have some other ideas, is that it's almost a question of societal institutions, like the structure of society. It's not a question of the personal greatness. It could be the personal greatness of a Navi is ahead of a Kohen Gadol, or the Rosh Sanhedrin. But the question is, what position do you have in society? The king comes first, not necessarily because he's the greatest Tzaddik or the greatest Talmud Chacham, but because he's the one who has the ultimate authority in society and people have to respect him. And when there's a breakdown of the respect for authority, then all of society suffers. So in terms of running society, it could be the Kohen Gadol comes next, because the Kohen Gadol runs the Beis HaMikdash, the Avodah, which played a very central role, you know, in all of Kal Yisrael. And then there's the Navi and the Rosh Sanhedrin. I'm not sure, you know, who played a bigger role in society. I guess it's hard to tell, but maybe the Navi did. But it could be that this is a question, so to speak, for the broader institutional stability. Today we really suffer from that, because there's really no respect for authority in Western society, and it is not helpful. And it's not good for the country, it's not good for the world, because it creates a tremendous amount of anarchy. I mean, you see what happens, you know, for better or for worse, but you know, the president decides to take action in Iraq and has to do something. Everywhere he turns, there's somebody taking shots at him, making fun of him, accusing him of all kinds of things. Like, how do you function in a society like that? There has to be a certain amount of respect that doesn't exist. So it makes it makes for a great deal of hefkeres. And this is more important when you're dealing with a society that's run up in Torah. Then the breakdown in the structures of society is also a breakdown in the Torah itself. So I would assume, perhaps, that the Hesber is that in terms of the role that they play in maintaining a Torah society, they play a bigger role. So the king is first, he plays the biggest role. The Kohen Gadol is second, because he plays the second biggest role. And then the Navi, and then the Rosh Sanhedrin. The Chidush HaGaonim brings down from the Sefer Rosh Yosef a very fascinating interpretation of some of the history, the early Melucha and Kal Yisrael, based on this Gemara. I would like to perhaps extend it a bit. He says as follows: when Shaul HaMelech was appointed king, he was appointed king by Shmuel HaNavi. But we do not find that the Kohen Gadol played any role in that appointment. The Kohen Gadol at that time was a man by the name of Avimelech. He was the father of Evyasser, who eventually became the Kohen Gadol in the time of David HaMelech, and is about to lose his Kohen Gadol to Tzadok. Or maybe has already. It's kind of in between. Shaul HaMelech's Melucha did not last. Lasted between 2 to 3 years, difference of opinion exactly how long, suggests the Rosh Yosef that the reason why his Melucha didn't last is because they bypassed the Kohen Gadol. Kohen Gadol was supposed to be first, and by bypassing the Navi, doing it by himself, meant that it wasn't really a full appointment. And he says further, Shaul was not accepted as a king right away. People didn't want him, and they didn't accept him. It was only after he was victorious in battle that they accepted him. He says, perhaps the reason why they didn't accept him is because of the same reason, that the Kohen Gadol was not involved in the appointment. Therefore, he says, here, David HaMelech made it his business that the Kohen Gadol should be involved also, and his Navi in the Rosh Sanhedrin, so that it shouldn't be subject to the same challenge. He adds further, and this is very interesting, that the great chait of Shaul HaMelech was as a result of his suspicions of David HaMelech, suspicions that were not entirely unfounded, mind you. Right? He thought that David was trying to take over the throne. The fact is that David was designated to take over the throne. He just wasn't going to do anything until history took its course. But it wasn't as if his suspicions were totally out of the blue. When David was running away from Shaul, he got himself food and supplies in Nov, Irakon, which is the city of Avimelech, the Kohen Gadol. Shaul thought that there was a conspiracy and wiped out the city. And he believed Doeg HaAdomi, who is one of the villains of Shmuel, that they were conspiring with David against him. But how could he think such a thing? The Kohen Gadol is there, Irakonim. Why would he think that the Kohanim are gathering together in conspiracy against him? And Rosh Yosef suggests because the Kohanim really had a basis for it. Because they weren't involved. They were bypassed, and the Kohen Gadol himself was bypassed in the appointment of Shaul. According to protocol, they should have been involved. So perhaps they never accepted Shaul. Perhaps they would rather side with David. And therefore, it created fertile territory for the suspicions of Shaul HaMelech. It made it seem reasonable to Shaul and realistic to Shaul that they Taka might be involved in David's rebellion. The my addition was, it occurs to me that David HaMelech himself was also not appointed by a Kohen Gadol. David HaMelech himself was also appointed by Shmuel HaNavi alone. Kohen Gadol was not involved. And there may have been other reasons for that, because David HaMelech was appointed while Shaul was still king. It was kind of a dangerous thing, and Shmuel himself was afraid to do it. But Kosh Baruch Hu, you know, gave him an eitzah. Interesting aside, because Shmuel said, if I appoint David as a king and Shaul hears about it, Shaul will have me killed. So Kosh Baruch Hu gave him a cover story. He says, you could tell him that you're going to David for a different reason. There was some other excuse. And at the same time, you appoint him king. So Yishai, appoint him king. From here, the Gemara learns one of the sources that you're allowed to be mishana, you're allowed to distort the truth, l'man hashalom, for the sake of peace. Because Shmuel HaNavi was told by Hashem to sort of distort the truth. It wasn't an outright lie, because there were two reasons he went to Yishai, but one was really, really secondary. The other was the main primary reason, and that's a distortion of the truth. But you could do that for maintaining shalom. But the Gemara asks an interesting question. Why was Shmuel worried in the first place? Shluchei mitzvah in the nizakin. You're coming to do a mitzvah from Hashem, so you're worried? And it says, when it's shchiach hazeka, it's different. When you're doing something that is patently dangerous, obviously dangerous, then you're not necessarily protected. Shluchei mitzvah can't go in the middle of the battlefield and expect that I'm necessarily protected just because I'm doing a mitzvah. So this is such a dangerous act, appointing a king while the other king is still sitting on the throne, that Shmuel had no right to rely on Shechem Mitzvah and Nizakim. But it occurs to me that perhaps, you know, David HaMelech Melucha did not catch on so easily either. When David was made king, for the first 7 years of his Melucha, he was only the king over Shevet Yehuda and perhaps Binyamin, and the other Shvatim did not accept him. He was Melech Bechevron. And there was a lot of back and forth. It wasn't so easy until he finally established his rule over all of Kal Yisrael. And it could be, according to the Rosh Yosef Mahaloch, that might be part of the explanation. It may be that David HaMelech also, his anointment bypassed the rules of protocol, maybe for good reason, but sof kol sof, the Kohanim were not involved, and therefore perhaps was not as accepted by Klal Yisrael. Had he been appointed the right way, with a Kohen, with a Navi, maybe with the Rosh Sanhedrin as well, there seems to be some debate whether that's needed, he would have been accepted right away. Of course, obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want it that way, because he was the one who told Shmuel to do it secretly and didn't involve the Kohen Gadol. But the fact of the matter is, that could be the reason why it didn't catch on.